Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. We're starting today a two-part multi-unit franchising series. Should be some very, very relevant information, especially as Franchise Updates Multi-Unit Conference will be going on next week in Las Vegas, Nevada. So the timing is right. I do want to thank last week's guest. It really had an enlightening time last week on Franchise Today. And, you know, we're coming out of a very coming out of the first quarter. It's been a very good first quarter for Franchise Today. You know, when you look at where we were last year, we were doing a lot of single segments. This year, we moved into a series format, and some of them will be two-part series, some will be three-part, some will be five-part, such as in February we did the Voices of Franchising, and that was really a very strong series for us. We had Steve Caldera, the CEO of the IFA. We had Nick Powles and his newly launched 1851 magazine. We had, it was just so many great things that have been going on. We had Therese Stilgen from Franchise Update. We had Nancy Weingartner from Franchise Times magazine. So really stepping up with some really great professionals in franchising. And of course, I would be remiss without talking about the upcoming fourth annual Franchise Legal Series, which is going to come up all of April, all of May. That's 9 weeks in a row of some of the finest legal talent in franchising today. We're going to talk about financial performance representations. We're going to be talking about franchise sales best practices. Warren Lee Lewis, the author of the Franchise Seller's Handbook, will be on. Lane Fisher, Lee Plave, Jonathan Redgrave. I mean, it just, the list goes on and on, and they're going to recap everything the last week in May, which will coincide with the IFA's Legal Symposium. Really fantastic stuff. And then in June, we're revamping a little bit. Now series is going to be the franchise model. We're going to have 4 weeks in a row. We're going to be talking about the franchise sales and development, technology and franchising, operations, marketing. It's really going to be a great series. And I was real anxious, as I mentioned last week, I met with Mary Thompson of the Dwyer Group, and president of Mr. Reuter. She was the Mr. Reuter. She was the award winner, the Bonnie Levine award winner at the IFA, and she's going to be on during June. And, of course, Dina Dwyer-Owens will be on during the summer, as we have our franchisor best practices spotlight series. So really an exciting time at Franchise Today. And, of course, as I said, next week is Franchise Updates, multi-unit conference, and then the following month we'll have the Franchise Times Franchise Finance Conference. I was asked to speak at the new IFA Technology and Marketing Summit, FranCamp, which will be in Atlanta, Georgia, in May. So we really got an exciting chain of events, a string of events, if you would, for franchising. And we're really happy to be part of all of this. And, of course, we really would be remiss in not thanking our great strategic partner, Fishman Public Relations. Love the job that Deborah Vilches and Sherry and Brad Fishman have been doing, really helping getting Franchise Today totally mainstream, and we continue to see record listenership. Next week, we'll have Tom McCord, the VP of Franchise Development at CC's Pizza. So he'll be with me as the multi-unit series continues. You know, recently, I attended a franchise development seminar about Jersey Mike's subs. I didn't just show up. I was personally invited, but Brian Summers, their VP of Franchise Development, and it was really a great experience. And I was really honored to be there. And I got an opportunity to meet some of the franchise development team and their Houston area developer and two of the franchisees. And, you know, really you could just feel the culture of Jersey Mike's shining through in their passion, their pride, the enthusiasm for the brand. And as I wrote in a blog post about the event, I said, you know, you probably noticed I haven't mentioned any names in that post. And I said, it's because Jersey Mike's really is one of the few franchise brands that I've been around. And I've been in franchising for just at 30 years now, where truly Jersey Mike's is a team in every sense. And for those of you that was fortunate as I was to see Peter Cancro, the Jersey Mike's founder and CEO, receive the IFA's Entrepreneur of the Year Award at the recently completed IFA 2013 convention. He stated the award wasn't for him, it was for Jersey Mike's. And it was really neat to see all the area developers. I think it was 35, 40, or 50 of the area developers in the team sitting in the audience. And certainly it was culture at its finest. You know, it was my honor to be at that event, as I said. I did learn a great deal and was proud to be in the room and be involved in franchising in general, because really it's that type of passion that was exhibited that really puts franchising in a great light. And if you know anything about Jersey Mike's and specifically about the month of March, it's all about giving back to the community. And if anyone is aware of that, I can't imagine you being in franchising and not be aware, you'll realize, you know, that I could talk on and on and write on and on about those efforts. They're truly remarkable. And, you know, the blog post I titled was Passion, Enthusiasm, Culture, Jersey Mike's, and I really believe that. And today, my guest is Mike Manzo, the Chief Operating Officer for Jersey Mike's. He's a Jersey Mike's sub veteran in every sense. He came up through the system wearing the apron, so to speak, working side by side with founder and CEO Peter Cancro. His fingerprints are on nearly every aspect of the company, from operations to training and from purchasing to franchise development. And he had the distinction of working at the original Mike Subs restaurant in Point Pleasant during high school. And after serving 4 years in the U.S. Marine Corps, he managed the original store in 1985. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce Mike Manzo. Mike, welcome to Franchise Today.
Gosh, Paul, that was a heck of an introduction, and thank you. It's my honor to be here, and whatever I can do for this franchising community and Jersey Mike's, we'd love to stay involved and get involved. We believe it's our responsibility to teach and culture everything from our franchisee to prospective franchisees, and if you come aboard and you don't buy our franchise and you go into another franchise, as long as there's an education period and we taught you something, you learned a little bit more before you came into the room, that's what we like to do here. So thank
you
again.
You certainly do it. The entire brand does it, all the way down to the store levels. And, you know, I think the only thing that I could ask today, which I know you can't deliver, is put one of those big subs in front of me right now. I mean, it's almost lunchtime here. The other day, I got in a car with my daughter, and I said, we're going to Jersey Mike's. And she said, is there one close by? I said, well, they're moving up here towards the Woodlands, Texas, but there's one, a new one in Houston. We went down, and I had the big, giant, original Mike's Way. And, of course, I love the juice. And if you would, for a lot of people not aware of Jersey Mike's, We can't go any further without you explaining what's the juice.
Yeah, on a back of some of those business cards, people say it's all about the juice. We have a red wine vinegar and an olive oil blend, and we call that the juice. That's the sandwich. Essentially, it's been made the same since 1956. In growing a brand, we did not change the quality or the quantity. And we've had seven recessions in the last 25 years or so that we had weathered. And when we go to the franchise community, we could cheapen the product. We can reduce the product in a quality sense. And unequivocally, the OE said, no, that's not what we purchased. Stay with the red wine vinegar and the olive oil blend and continue the quality sense. That olive oil blend is a 25% blended product, which is quite expensive. And it's just a premium product that we're real proud to put on our sandwiches. So you have to have it Mike's way, and it has to come with the juice, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Really a great experience. Obviously, they didn't know me from Adam when I walked in, and I was the place was crowded. We were treated very professionally, very friendly. The supervisor, the operations manager, as he referred to himself, you know, came over to us just as he did to everybody. Everything was to perfection. And like I said, they didn't know we were coming. They didn't know who we were. So, you know, the experience was just tremendous. And, you know, so that takes me to an initial question, Mike, is how did a company that started as simple a mom-and-pop storefront as there possibly could be in 1956 and build such a following of loyal customers literally from coast to coast?
It takes a mindset that you really have to worry about inside your four walls. And unit profitability is our measuring point. So when we started franchising in 1987 and designing all these programs, the first thing we thought about was unit profitability. And what equals unit profitability? Well, it starts at lease negotiations, and it has to be a seamless transition from all those departments to get that store open. Most important is the experience that you spoke of. Now, you can have your gross sales at a certain number, but if you don't have the right people behind the counter, it's never going to work. So the experience and the training has evolved over the years, and even though you have a lot of online training, we do a lot of face-to-face training, and our training program is now as many as 10 weeks. We do, I think it was about 4 years ago, we changed it to three different phases, and it's 180 hours outside in a certified training store, and then you have to come back to New Jersey for a week, and then you have to go back out for another 180 hours. And we take that very seriously. There's a lot of passion in the training, and the owner has to go through training with their key person. So we put a lot of money into training, knowing that sandwiches, it is difficult to make, and it is complicated when you have a line to the door, such as you experienced. But to have that passion has to be a training program that you can't cut corners. I remember reading the Domino's book from Tom Monahan, The Pizza Tiger, and Tom explicitly expressed that he almost lost his company when they started reducing training hours because it was a cost. Well, training shouldn't be looked at a cost. It should be looked at as a marketing tool. And we increased training, the number of hours, four or five times during the process of franchising.
You know, it's interesting, two things I want to bring up. You mentioned face-to-face, and when I met Peter at the IFA, it seems like ages ago, but it was only a month ago, and we were talking, and he agreed to be on Franchise Today, and I think we're going to be doing that during the Franchisor Spotlight series during the summer. But he said, I'm only going to do it one way, Paul. He said, we're going to be face-to-face. He said, you're a New York boy. I'm a Jersey boy. We're going to hash this out, but it's going to be face-to-face. and you could just, obviously a lot of good kidding aside, but you really can see the passion shine through. And I think that the passion that shines through is even beyond Jersey Mike's. You could just tell Peter as a person how his passion for being involved and doing this day in and day out really shines through. And seeing so many of the different videos, both at the IFA convention and, of course, at the seminar that I participated in, and there's Peter on there, and you could just see the passion coming through. I mean, what's it like to work with an individual like that? And you've probably worked with him longer than anybody, I would imagine, at Jersey Mike's. Yeah. Pretty damn close, right?
Yes. We all feel that we've been blessed to have an organization that's led by a wonderful man. He doesn't put – you can't fake passion, and he doesn't put a price tag to that. He believes of unit profitability for the franchisee. When we're developing this company, he was so concerned about our franchisees making money, being able to buy items for their families, being profitable. And it wasn't about the business model. It was about if they were happy at home and they were making enough money, they're going to be happy at work. And we have so many stores that he would visit stores and speak to the franchisees and speak to the workers, and he'd leave, and we'd say, what happened? And Peter said, well, I just bought him a patio set, and we're going to have outside seating. And he would just go around and give little gifts to franchisees. It could be a new seating package, a new menu board, whatever it was. It was almost like he was a Santa Claus. But wow. The franchisees believe how much, and they understand Peter's passion. But the way our franchisees truly came into the culture, and they believe it, and they give back unconditionally to the communities that they serve. That's what we're most proud about. It's not the 600 stores open or the next 150 in development. It's the passion that the franchisees have given to food banks and the children's hospitals and the local schools and the communities that they serve. That's where the pride is. And I know that Peter's very happy about that.
Yeah, I would imagine so, and I definitely could see it, and you could feel it when you're around him. And the second thing I wanted to bring up, you know, you were talking about, you know, cost and still adding, you know, hours to the training. And it was neat because as my daughter and I were in the store and we were eating, and I looked up and I said, Jennifer, I want you to look up and I want you to tell me something that stands out in your mind. And she looked up and she said, I can't believe how many lights there are. And I said, exactly. It could easily have been done by taking out half of the lights. And a lot of other stores, a lot of other restaurants would have done that. But it's that attention to detail throughout the entire store that is so well thought out. It creates the right experience. I'm sure at some point, you know, Peter probably thought, okay, do we do, you know, 18 lights or do we do 10 lights? And made the decision without, you know, giving a lot of extra or at least not making cost being the sole deciding factor. And you could see that all the way across the board. I mean, you could see that, you know, behind the counter. You could see that as you peek back in the back of the house. You could see it the way everything is situated in the store. You could see it with the quality furniture, not just some cheap furniture that you think you're going to fall off of. I mean, all the way across the board. And I know that has to resonate all the way to the franchisees.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And our franchisees pay a little bit more on an hourly scale than most other restaurants. And in a restaurant business, as you know, there's two major costs that you can truly control is food cost and payroll cost. And through our vendors, we believe we have some very low food costs. But that payroll cost, if we could talk about that a little bit, that's where we make up a big difference. Even though we're paying a little bit more, we're getting a better quality employee, someone that smiles a little bit more. But they also move a little more efficiently. And with all those efficiencies, they're really our marketing team. So hopefully that our customers are coming in, grabbing a great experience, a great sub, and they're coming back just because the folks behind that counter treating those customers with a tremendous amount of respect, their passion, and a smile, and what a great way to enjoy a submarine sandwich, but with great service. So we go ahead and put a little bit more money into training, and we also have refresher courses of a team from New Jersey continually go out around the country, and we call it 14 feet of operational excellence because that's 14 feet of the front counters that when we see our customer. And we spend last year we I think the goal was 2,500 part-timers that we recertified, and this year the goal is 3,500.
Wow. Well,
and they all get T-shirts at the end of the segment. They get T-shirts because it's part of a like a rock and roll tour. So
well,
last
sure.
year it was a back to basics tour 2012.
That's the culture. That's awesome. Yeah. So let's shift a little bit to today's topic, which of course is multi-unit franchising. And I know Jersey Mike's has a very strong multi-unit franchise program. So I guess the first question I would ask is, what does Jersey Mike's look for in a current franchisee? And I'm talking about one that's already a single-unit franchisee with Jersey Mike's. What do they look for in that current franchisee as they desire to become a multi-unit franchisee?
We grew the brand with mom-and-pop operators, folks that never had restaurant experience. And we found out that the learning curve with those folks was such. Today, we look for somebody with the restaurant experience, because the restaurant industry could be brutal at times if you're not used to dealing with the teenagers and the hourly rates and the economic situations with what's going on right now. So in a franchisee, we look at financially, we qualify them just as a regular bank or an SBA loan would qualify them for. We look for restaurant experience. The third out of four step process, we look at the structure of the company. Who is going to be wearing that apron? And we need to interview that person, because that person needs to have that passion, willing to serve. And the fourth thing we look at is the passion to be in the restaurant business, to stand on the stand behind the counter 55 hours a week, whatever it's going to take to serve that sandwich. So passion and willing to serve the customers is equal in our eyes to finances and experience.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the finance side. 2 weeks ago, we had Ron Feldman, the president and CEO of Franchise America Finance, and I know Jersey Mike's is one of Franchise America Finance clients. I know you all have a package together. We actually talked a little bit about Jersey Mike's 2 weeks ago on this show, and maybe we should have just called the month of March Jersey Mike's month on franchise today. I can think of worse things, that's for sure. And then last week, Sandy Shoemaker, a partner at EKSNH, a financial firm that works on audits and a whole bunch of other things in the franchise community, her and I were talking about unit economics. And I keep hearing, you know, unit profitability from you. And it's really a breath of fresh air. That is the driving tone as we're talking about successful franchise development. And, you know, so with the current trend of looking for people that have restaurant experience and obviously some of them wanting to come on board right off the bat as a multi-unit operator. So beyond net worth, beyond capital, you know, what else might you look for or have looked for in these people that come in and right off the bat say to you, you know, Mike, I'm interested in doing this, but I want to do, you know, 10 units. What do you look for in that type of individual?
Well, the approval process is equal to selling an individual franchise, believe it or not. We need to see who the operator is. We need to understand their culture. We just entertained somebody that was very experienced and successful with another brand, and they have over 100 units with another brand, and we sat for 2 days talking to them about the lay of the land, who's going to be running the stores. Financially, that was pretty much of a short conversation, and then the experience of the people that are going to be behind the brand. And then they're tasked to put together a business plan, and we have to meet those operators. We also encourage them to be on the franchise agreements. If they're not on the franchise agreements, they should be on one of those LLCs or corporation papers. We believe in the sweat equity partnerships here. And most times the franchisee, the prospective franchisee, goes through that exercise and realizes that he only has enough for five stores, so maybe he'll only buy a five-store package. But it comes down from the unit economics. It only works if you have an owner-operator behind that counter or somebody that's invested interest, and this could be a young person that just got out of college or just didn't, maybe perhaps didn't go to school. We have a lot of success stories of folks that just came out of high school, started working for us a couple, 3 years, and they have sweat equity with a particular franchisee, and they start growing their enterprise from within. So it does work on that model as well. So finances, but more importantly, the people.
You know, something unique that I heard at the seminar I went to, and I don't remember if it was Ed Yancey, one of your VPs of Franchise Development, or Brian Summers, also a VP of Franchise Development. I believe Ed is VP of Franchise Development of the Southeast United States. I really thought it interesting when I heard that Jersey Mike's does not have an item 19. And for those of you listeners that aren't aware of an item 19, I applaud you for listening to the show because it is one of the things we talk about quite a bit. But item 19, of course, being the financial performance representation in the franchise disclosure document. And with dealing with a high level of knowledge and experience in the restaurant industry, and a lot of these successful restaurant operators obviously are very big on return on investment. They're very big on unit economics. They're very big on, you know, tweaking a percentage out here or a tenth of a percent over here and vice versa, and they're not being an item 19. Can you give us a little bit of your thoughts or maybe just explain a little bit, because I think this lends towards the culture of mm-hmm. why there isn't an item 19, because I was blown away that there wasn't. I know many are, and I think it's very interesting, and obviously it hasn't diminished your success. So if you would care to share your thoughts on that.
Yes, there was a survey that was just released today, I believe it was from Technomic, that ranked us the third fastest growing chains with over $200 million in sales. And I looked at it and I said, well, those numbers aren't accurate because because we just don't disclose the numbers. And prospective franchisees always say, why not? Well, that's a position we've taken since day one. And there's a good number of franchisors that don't disclose item 19 because, well, our feeling is that we don't want the franchisee, prospective franchisee, to look at that number and bet on that number. We want them, mm-hmm. we'd rather have them go out and investigate and speak to all of our franchisees and understand their profitability, understand what they do as a business, and because those numbers may not have the return they're looking for, but yet the actual out there in the field is much higher than what is in item 19. So item 19 can go either way.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, now, if you're looking to open a store in the Midwest part of the country, we ask you to call our franchisees from Dallas all the way north to Chicago. And if you're out in California, please call all the 87 stores out in California. And you get a true sense of two things. One, the number, but that's not the important thing to these franchisees. What's important is to hear the passion from the existing franchisee, because that existing franchisee sat in that chair one other time and had the same questions. And they say, look, here's the franchisor. This is, you get so much more from that franchisee than just the numbers. You get, what does the company really mean? I've met the executives. I've met the sales team, development team. But is that truly the company? And then you start talking about marketing. The conversation goes into operations. And it's all driven. You're only as good as the last sub you made, and you're only as good as the operator. So regardless of what item 19 says, it's going to come right back down to operations. But that phone call that we try to initiate between the prospective franchisee and the owner is so much more, has so many more quality points to it than just reading a number off a piece of paper.
And sure, you know, and a lot of people would think, you know, with so many multi-unit operators and with restaurant experience, that, you know, a lot of these people would just be buried in financials. And I was really impressed. I met two great young individuals that are Jersey Mike's franchisees, Brent Jones and David Gonzalez, and they were at the seminar. And one, I think, has one location just opening, and the other, I guess, is in a multi-unit phase. And The enthusiasm was just phenomenal. And then, as some of the people that attended the seminar had asked about, you know, actually the line where the subs are being made and different things, and I believe it was Brent that said, hey, I can make a better sandwich than anybody in my place. And I jump on the line a lot, and I'm cutting cold cuts away, and I'm making the sandwiches, and I'm right in the middle of it. And to hear that type of passion, when a lot of people would think, oh, well, you know, you want to go ahead and open 10 or 15 of these and, you know, drive around in your BMW and, you know, look at your books and look at your return on investment. I didn't see that with these individuals. And that was more than just their personality. That's a culture that's been, you know, just built in their mind, and they really feel it and exude it every single day.
And those are the folks that we're trying to attract. And regardless if you're looking for a food restaurant concept, if you're looking for a restaurant concept in franchising, any type of services, and the IFA does a great job of this, presenting all type of franchising to our country. If you're looking to buy a franchise, that's what you're looking for, is to speak to the other franchisees and have them tell you about the culture of the company. And I appreciate being on your show, and I would give the advice of, if you're looking, which franchising is a great way to invest your money, to make a great living, and get into the business world with a true partner. If you're looking to get into franchising, please speak to the other franchisees, and everybody knows those top 10 questions to ask. They're all over the websites, but one of the questions, how does the franchisor react if you have to break that glass and grab the axe? Is the franchisor there for you? And with Jones and Gonzalez, they just bought into a system and said, you know what, I've been interviewed 4 or 5 times. I believe in your system. I believe in the franchisees. I want to get on board, and it becomes contagious. Now, don't you think their manager and their assistant manager is trying to emulate them to be an owner? And they
Absolutely.
See their passion as an owner? When you walk into your workforce and your boss is excited, you're excited. If you have a grumpy boss,
Absolutely.
You're going to be grumpy. So in franchising, there's plenty of opportunities out there. I would always look to the franchisor and understand their principles.
You know, what's really interesting, too, is the level of individuals that you are attracting to that have significant franchise experience. I had the honor of meeting Terry Nordenstrom, your area developer in the area that I believe, if I'm, and correct me if I'm wrong, has a lot of experience with Domino's and is now with Jersey Mike's. And just the level of expertise and experience that he brings in that individuals like Brent and David can look up to and work with on a very regular basis also said something about the culture and everything that's being built at Jersey Mike's.
Hoyt Jones, the president of our company, came on board almost 6 years ago now. He was the executive vice president of Domino's. I believe he left the company in 2000 or 2001. So with his name, he was a man of great integrity, still is a leader in the industry. Terry and Hoyt probably had worked together, but we're attracting McDonald's veterans, Jack in a Box, Papa John's, and you just go right down a list of all the major franchising companies that we're attracting. Maybe because their territory or the zone that they have purchased, they're just not available anymore. Locations aren't available for that particular that brand, so they're trying to substitute some vacancies with our brand. We're blessed that we have some great talent in the company from other brands, and they're bringing their best practices over and their successful practices over in management and leadership. But making that submarine sandwich, they all bought into our operations manual. And cutting the corners and cutting quality is not part of the recipe, and that's what's been, knock on wood, that's what's been helping us become more successful.
We are Assist Franchise Today. We are broadcasting live on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Paul Segretto. I'm with Michael Manzo, the Chief Operating Officer of Jersey Mike's. And we're talking multi-unit franchising. And Mike, when we talk about, you know, bringing on these other experienced restaurateurs from other franchise organizations, as you mentioned, Domino's and McDonald's and the like, and then also Hoyt being on for the last 6 years as a president, I really think says something about, you know, Peter Cancro's vision, because as you look through the ranks of Jersey Mike's management, you see a lot of individuals like yourself that have been there long term, that have been there, you know, starting out in the store and obviously working up, and that is tremendous. Nothing says more about an organization that builds from the ranks and up through the ranks. And I believe Brian actually made sandwiches at Mike Subs as well, and I'm sure there are many others. But yet, reaching outside the Jersey Mike's family and bringing in somebody with the talent and reputation and experience like an individual like Hoyt really says a lot that Peter is a very open-minded individual and is always looking at ways to improve the system. And I think that just speaks wonders.
That does, and we could add another name to that is John Tezza.
Absolutely.
He's been a great addition to the team. He's been here 2 years now. He's brought in some great practices from his experience with another subchain. And he had when he joined the company, I think he spent about 2 hours here in New Jersey. Then he started flying around the country meeting our franchisees and understanding the culture. John was from the Jersey Shore. He used to eat at the original store, and I had made him a couple sandwiches along the way. We always knew of John because he was doing so many great things for the Quiznos brand. And when he came aboard and understood the passion and the culture from within, he then continued our developing schedule. He increased our real estate side of the equation, and now he's helping us with construction. So now you have a Hoyt Jones in the company, getting us to more of a global sense and thinking differently than we had as mom and pop operators. You added John Tezza to the equation, and you know, those two quality names have really helped us promote the brand and franchise even further. This year we're looking to open anywhere between 130 to 150 stores. But if we only open one, this is our philosophy, Paul. If we only open 115 stores, that's fine with us, as long as they were the 115 right stores to open and profitable stores.
That's correct.
So that's our. Peter does not crunch numbers that way with us, and nobody gets compensated any more or any less if you hit that number or if you don't hit that number. He just makes sure. His question is, were they the right ones to open, and is everybody making money?
So as we talk about, you know, multi-unit ownership, as we've spoken on Franchise Today in the past, we see there are certain brands that have had some difficulties with multi-unit ownership. Multi-unit ownership is not for everybody. My own personal experience, I was a multi-unit franchisee of another national brand in the non-food service side and succeeded tremendously and then almost failed catastrophically. And so there's a lot of ups and downs with multi-unit ownership. How do you, how does Jersey Mike's monitor, or do they monitor multi-unit franchisees a little bit differently, or maybe just an added aspect to monitoring them to ensure that they're staying the course? Because obviously you can only spread yourself out in so many places.
I just returned back from Phoenix, where we had our certified trainers class, and in class was a franchisee from California. He has one store, and he's going from one store operator to a four store operator in the next 9 months. He's never been in a food service before, never been in a food service business before. Came to us with great passion, wonderful guy in the community, and he had the finances. So I was speaking to him. He said, "How do I do this, Mike?" And I said, "How are your systems? how are the systems and operations, who's in charge of marketing, who's in charge of hiring and HR, et cetera. The multi-unit operator is not viewed any differently in our eyes than a single-unit operator. Just because you have four leases that are being executed, we look at all four individually. We run their capitalization plan. We run estimated sales numbers, and we know pretty much what that store is going to cost and what that unit profitability should be before they sign that lease. So with that mentality and with that system, if you have a one-unit agreement or if you have a multi-unit agreement, we run that system individually. Now with operations, each store has to be held accountable on its own. So the training program, if you have a five-unit agreement, you have five different training programs. So you have to bring two people per store in our system through training five different times. So you have to have ten people come through our training system if you have a five-unit agreement. Similarly, if you only have one unit, it still has to be two people. So running that system and not treating them any differently than a single unit, that's been successful for us.
I think that speaks volumes, too, because too many times I've seen in franchise organizations, somebody's been successful in one store, they open up a second one, and a lot of times it's like, well, you know, I really don't need to be trained, you know, I already got a successful store. So I think absolutely that's spot on to make sure that they're trained equally across all the different stores.
You're absolutely right, and when we have closed stores in the past, you look at why that store closed, and it's because of the operator. Yeah, you know, as an operator myself, I always look very critical about operations. Very seldom it's the real estate, but it's because you cheated on training. And the reason why I explained all this is because the experience from 10 or 15 years ago, we did that. We said, oh, you have one unit open, you go ahead and open your second unit without the certified training. Well, that imploded on the franchisee and on us. And it was a valuable mistake. We learned a lot from that loss. And now we treat everybody individually, even if you have five to 10 stores or one store. All the stores have to stand individually on their own merit.
Well, I really appreciate you telling us, you know, that everything hasn't always been so perfect, because I know a lot of people that would listen to this probably say, all right, enough.
We get it.
But, you know, learning from mistakes is obviously a key part of growing a brand, and not only learning from those mistakes, but doing the things necessary to minimize them or eliminate them in the future. So definitely hats off to you for doing that.
We learning from your mistakes and not hiding from them is what we did every Monday morning way back when we would have a staff meeting, and we would applaud what worked and we'd correct what didn't work. We truly believe in that unit profitability. And if you're looking to buy any franchise out there, you need to understand the mindset of the franchisor. Are they in this just to build units? And they don't have that passion for your brand, your living expenses, and your time and service, or they're just putting numbers up. So that was a valuable lesson.
I'm sure it was, definitely. So, you know, we've touched on a lot of things. We keep centering around, you know, the unit economics, unit profitability, customer service. The marketing program, from what I've seen, has been very effective. You've got good social media presence. The franchisees obviously are more active than passive, certainly from what I've seen in the stores and talking with franchisees. So when we start talking about culture, we continue to talk about culture. I think a big part that towards the success of Jersey Mike's has to be attributed to the giving programs. And March, I know, is the giving month, but obviously it continues throughout the year. So I want to read something here. says, giving, making a difference in someone's life has always been a guiding principle at Jersey Mike's. It's a philosophy that Jersey Mike's founder and CEO, Peter Kranko, has emphasized to each and every Jersey Mike's store owner. Support the community that supports you. I think that's just tremendous. And if you would, explain, share some of your feelings working with an organization and an individual that has this type of philosophy and how this resonates throughout all the franchise locations.
Yeah, this philosophy is not new to Peter. Since he purchased the store in 1975, he was giving back to the local high school and a Pop Warner program because he had come through the Pop Warner program and obviously the high school. And when he was an athlete, he remembers folks like Jack Baker, who owned a couple seafood restaurants, and Bob Hoffman's owned the local ice cream shop. And whereas he would be a recipient of Player of the Week awards or any type of accolade like that, and they were always involved in the school. So when Peter was just an independent operator owning Mike Subs at the time, he would give to all different causes. When we started franchising in 1987, we would have a fundraising day when we opened, and we would always give the money back to a local charity. So this started back in 1987. Well, now it has blossomed, and so proud that we have done so many great things, and I don't know how much money it is anymore. It's just millions and millions of dollars. But you know, in 1996, we went down to Raleigh, North Carolina, to feed the Special Olympic athletes, and we made 10,000 lunches. Well, that's great. That's great for business, but for the franchisees to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and start making those sandwiches and deliver it to all these athletes and all around the city of Raleigh, North Carolina. And that money, the cost of doing all that came out of the marketing fund, and it didn't hurt the franchisee. That was the power of it, where Peters would support something, but it wouldn't be at the cost of the franchisee. It would be at the cost of the marketing budget. So when people say, oh, you're not on TV or you're not doing this, well, no, we're not doing that, but we're giving food to wipe out kids' cancer down in Dallas, Texas, or feeding the food banks of Monmouth Ocean County here in New Jersey or at UCLA. The cause marketing is now the phrase everybody's using, but that's been a philosophy of Peter since 1975. And you know, when you talk about the culture, it also is, it's not what we drive, it's what the franchisee and the franchisor drive together. And you have to be an empathetic listener. And we have not always been right. And our franchisees and our relationship with the franchisees is transparent. And I think that leads to a lot of culture. Peter does drive the culture. He does drive the giving piece. He drives the passion. And I think the franchisees buy into that because we've listened to them for so many years, and we have that open door, open relationship.
You know, something else I like to read here is this month, Jersey Mike's is celebrating its third annual month of giving, a national fundraising campaign supporting 86 local charities. And since the program started 3 years ago, Jersey Mike's and its generous customers have raised more than $1.5 million for local causes. Jersey Mike's Christmas in July national fundraising campaign raised $218,000 for wreaths across America, which helped the organization lay more than 110,000 wreaths at Arlington National Cemetery on December 15, 2012. And as you mentioned, the food banks, together with our customers throughout the country, Jersey Mike's raised more than $100,000 for the food bank of Monmouth and Ocean Counties, benefiting victims of Hurricane Sandy. And, of course, the list goes on and on and on. Yeah, I'm almost speechless because it does go on and on and on. And it seems like, as you said, the franchisees getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning making it. And I've seen some of the franchisees, you know, handing out sandwiches during charitable events. And there's just no qualms whatsoever. I mean, somebody could be giving them a $100 bill for that sandwich, and I don't think the enthusiasm would be any different.
And gosh, and yeah, how blessed are we for that?
Yeah.
We as a company, but we as a community. And just the other day, somebody called me and said, our town has been hit hard with the storm, and we're trying to get back to normal. And one of the things that we've always done in the springtime was we had this bicycle safety course for all the kids in the grammar school. And, you know, we're just trying to get back to normal here in this town. And they said the first call was to Jersey Mike's. And I said, you know, just let's put together a plan and let's go ahead and do it. And that budget that Peter never gives us is wonderful. During the storm in Sandy here, and you saw the devastation on the TV.
I saw it live, Mike.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes, I did.
There were so many. The local high school, 40% of our students were displaced, and I had some students in my house sleeping there for a couple weeks. But you think about the necessities, how many people we fed, and Peter said, just keep making subs, as much food as we have, just go ahead and give it out. And with our partners of, you know, Pepsi-Cola, Frito-Lay, we were able to bring in special deliveries and get the food to the people. Why do we do this? It certainly is because of Peter's passion, but it's the way we say thank you to our customers. We say thank you to our communities that we serve. Thank you for them coming into our stores and buying our sandwiches. It is about business, but it's also about saying thank you, and we're just sharing our love, and that's how we share it. So we're very thankful. As a group of business owners, we're thankful for that. They have a lot of choices to make to eat today for lunch, and we're glad they're making the choice of coming to Jersey Mike's.
You know, it's, as I was sitting in the seminar a couple of weeks ago, and one of the attendees had asked a question about, you know, purchasing, and of course understood where the products were coming from, and of course the conversation turned to produce. Obviously a big commodity, very hard to control because it's not something you could buy on a national level. You have to use some local vendors. And as was being explained to him about tomatoes, about how they've got to be red, how when they're cut, don't leave the part that's got the little stem on it or the little nut there in it. So the other day when I was at the Jersey Mike's in Houston and looking at the tomatoes in front of us, you talk the talk, walk the walk. It was exactly as it was described in that meeting. I mean, the tomatoes were bright red. There were none that looked pink. There were none that looked hard. There were none that had, you know, the core in them. They were some of the best tomatoes. So, I mean, you're walking the walk and talking the talk, and obviously it's working, and it's working very well. We're in the last 10 minutes or so of Franchise Today, talking about multi-unit franchising with Jersey Mike's Chief Operating Officer, Mike Manzo. And somebody had asked me, and this is a side note, but probably not so much because you are a Jersey boy, any relation to the Real Housewives Manzo family?
No, there is not. I've watched the show a few times, but no relations, no.
Damn, I thought I'd have an opportunity to meet Dina Manzo. Okay.
I can make up a great story if you want, but
sure,
I'd rather not. Hey, you spoke about the tomatoes, and let me tell you a funny story. Trying to train somebody back in 1988, and they said, where do you get the red tomatoes from? Every time they're delivered, they're green or they're orange. I said, what does your mom do with your tomatoes when she gets them from the food store? And he said, well, I remember her putting them on the shelf right in front of the window so the sun can ripen. I said, well, that's what we're going to do. We just don't have enough window space, so we're going to keep them in a box. And he just thought that was the greatest idea. I said, I never knew you ripen your own tomatoes, and that's something that each store does. Hopefully every day they sort through their tomatoes. And it's a big – we spend a lot of time on that in the training process. But all we do is put the tomato on the windowsill to ripen it up.
Well, you know, here's a
trade secret.
Yeah, well, here's an interesting part to this whole story, is that when the seminar that I keep referring to was 2 weeks ago at Maggiano's, which is a great Italian –
yes.
restaurant chain. I think they're still owned and operated by Brinker, but they're out of Chicago. Maggiano's is out of Chicago. It's always got the Frank Sinatra music. It's really a nice throwback to the old restaurants and, you know, the red and the heavy wood and what have you. So I was, being we were there, and there was some leftover food, and Brian said, you know, take some of this food home, and I brought it home. My wife said, yeah, we haven't been to Maggiano's in a long time. So this Saturday, we went, and we were in the area, and I said, let's go to Maggiano's. And we ordered a Caprese salad, tomatoes and mozzarella cheese and basil. And my wife commented about how hard and pink the tomatoes were. And now we're talking about a leading full-service restaurant chain, and here we are talking about Jersey Mike's, a sub shop, okay, that the tomatoes blew them away. And that right there, I mean, because we've had this conversation in my family as we were talking about this, and it's like, you know, they mentioned that, and then, of course, we went to the restaurant the other day and saw those nice, big, ripe tomatoes, and it's like the attention to detail is there and obviously wasn't there, and I'm not trying to knock Maggiano's. I love their food. Yes. I think they're a great brand, but still, the attention to detail wasn't there. The tomatoes were subpar.
They're a great brand. We love eating there. We just had another gathering there a couple months ago, the one in Vegas, I believe. But now, if an operations representative from that brand heard that, he's making phone calls right now. And that's,
I hope so.
That's what we do. Hey, we're not perfect. Even we have a 91% positive comment card process that we go through. And that was up from 87% just a few years ago. So when our customers call or write, and we do a great job with this on social media, if they have a problem, and if they said the tomatoes were not ripe enough, we call that unit operator. We don't go through the vice president of the area, the area director. We call the owner, and we say, hey, just want to let you know, this is what happened. Our customer service is all in-house. And I just saw her today, Melissa McCready. She's been with us for 15 years. And each complaint, each comment, each compliment comes right through our office right here. And I think just associating you with that customer and getting back to them to say, hey, we truly care. But knowing that, the franchisees serve ripe tomatoes. So
yeah.
It all comes down to the tomatoes and the juice, doesn't it, Paul?
Yeah, it comes down to the tomatoes and the juice and the onions. I mean, it's just... It was great. But, you know, not everybody knows East Coast style subs. And, you know, of course, I couldn't even think about for a moment about getting anything else but the original Mike's Way with the juice. And, of course, Peter always talks about, you know, the roast beef and the provolone and what have you. And I guess as you get closer to my neck of the woods and I frequent it more often, I'll probably get to that point of trying some of the other things. But, you know, there's a lot of people throughout the country that, like I said, are not familiar with East Coast-style subs. And what do you say to those individuals when they eat the sandwich and they say, it was okay?
You know, first of all, Subway has done a tremendous job introducing the sub to the world. World's largest restaurant group, they do a fantastic job. They're good people, and if you look at what they do versus what we do, we slice our sandwiches fresh to order, and that slicer is that's what's the difference between us and a lot of other brands. We can make a lot of mistakes in our operations from the slicer all the way down to the person that's wrapping up the sandwich and the cash register. We're only 3 feet away from our customer. We're handling the food. We're doing everything properly. And that's where the passion and the smiles from the crew needs to come out and welcome that guest. If they ask for that that the number 5 or the 13, they're expecting a certain amount of meat on that sandwich, fresh sliced all the time. The oil and vinegar has to be a certain amount, and at the end of it, 14 feet away, they wrap it up and they're on the way. That's where that training. That's why that training is so important to us, Paul.
Absolutely, and I'm sure that even if they're not familiar with it, the experience comes through. It's positive and memorable, and obviously it gets them coming back. Mike, I told you we would blow through an hour. We're about 45 seconds away, believe it or not, and I really thank you for being my guest today.
It was my pleasure, and I would love to come back and educate anyone that's interested in franchising, what they're looking for. If you want to have open questions, I'll be glad to answer anything. I believe in educating that consumer that's trying to change their life and trying to look mm-hmm. for that business opportunity. Anything I could do to help them out to make a decision, I'd be glad to do that. With the IFA, Brian Somers just started a program with the Professional Athletes Forum and helping athletes get into businesses. So
yep.
It doesn't matter who you are, where you came from, or your economic makeup, we all need to be educated somewhere. And I'll be glad to help you out anytime you need it, Paul.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Mike. Say hello to Peter and Tessa and all the boys. Next week, Tom McCord, VP of Franchise Development at CC's Pizza, as our multi-unit franchising series continues. And don't forget, April and May is our fourth annual Franchise Legal Series. Until then, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.